Hi guys, and welcome to the podcast. I am, of course, your host and podcast founder, Lawrence Francis. I just want to take this opportunity to give you a quick overview of this series, which features coverage of the Dublin Wine and Cheese Festival, which took place at Ivy Gardens in central Dublin between the 8th and the 11th of August 2019, which will air on the Interpreting Wine podcast between episodes 289 and episode 300. This will feature a mixture of talks and one-to-one interviews with some of the leading lights in the Irish and international wine scene. This consumer fair is now in its second year, and I was seriously impressed with the quality of speaker overall. I think that events of this type really lend themselves well to being covered for the podcast. I would love to feature more events of this kind in the future. So without further ado, here is today's episode of the Dublin Wine and Cheese Festival 2019 series. Today's episode of the podcast features Pascal Rossignol of Le Cavo Wine Merchants. Hear his origin story and transition from France to Ireland, where he established his import company. He gives us an overview of the Irish wine and food scene and looks ahead to the evolution of the natural wine scene. Enjoy.
Yeah, so my name is Pascal Rossignol, and I originate from Gervais-Chambertin in Burgundy. I actually worked for 3 years in the vineyards of Gervais-Chambertin as a wine grower, really, working for a wine grower. 3 full-time years. Eventually left making wine, and work into catering, where I work in different restaurants and hotels as different position for 13 years. Arrived in Ireland in 95, where I was managing a hotel in the northwest in Sligo. And in 1999, we decided to import wine. We seen there was a gap at the time for small artisan kind of producers, and we opened Le Cavo in the lovely city of Kilkenny. So we started to open a shop, and quickly this shop became a kind of a, we developed a wholesale side to the shop, so supplying restaurants and wine shops around the country. Kilkenny was ideal because it was located not far from Dublin, not far from Cork, not far from Waterford, pretty central, and we wanted also a quality of life living in the countryside. I'm from the country, so we wanted to live in the country. So as I say, starting Le Cavo in 99 and focusing on small artisan producers, and it's not about 8-9 years later that I think I've met a person which has become since my mentor and an incredibly good friend, Eric Nario of Le Cave de Pyrenne. So I kind of met Eric in the south of France during a tasting, and we got to chat, and we got very interested in each other's business, because we were realizing that we were importing a lot of same wineries, he in the UK and us in Ireland, parallel to each other. And Eric asked me, he says, have you tried such and such wine? And winery that I wasn't really aware. And he says, look, why don't you come to our portfolio tasting then? That was back in 2006 or 2007. Flew to London, went to his tasting, and absolutely was in awe of the wine he had actually uncovered there. Wine that had an expression, they were full of energy, they were really different. They had that kind of a raw energy. And I saw, we really thought, wow, this is like artisan pushed to the limit. And I really, really loved the wine. So, naturally enough, 2008 it was, we started to bring our first flock, which appeared to be natural wines. I don't even think they're probably called that way, but, they were really different, and with no additives, and made from organic and biodynamic grapes, and by wine grower, maverick wine grower, some of them, in a way that they were taking, doing things completely differently, completely against the grain. That's what was done in the industry at the time. Remember, 2008 was still where, the Parkerization and Parker wines were king, and so we started to bring a fair flock of natural wine in 2008. Presented them to the press and the trade in Dublin. There was about 18 different growers. There was like the likes of Puzela, La Stoppa, Bellotti, Vino Diana. Actually, Eric's wine was one of his first vintage there. We were introducing. There was a good mix of really, really, you know, real natural wines there in a way. And there was a mixed reaction. We started to sell those wines to the likes of, I think the first outlet that actually took all of the wine we brought was actually Ballymaloe House in Cork, in East Cork, and they created a page just for natural wine, and I thought it was wow, fantastic. And then the likes of Dave Gallagher, who at the time was working in Fallon and Byrne as a wine manager, and now of course the owner of Greenman Wine with his wife Claire, also listed quite a few of them. So you know, I said it was a good start, but then he kind of stayed there that way. It was really, really hard to sell them, you know. But yet we were importing more and more because we were meeting, as I was traveling, all those incredible growers. And I mean, some absolute legends, you know, in the natural wine world. And I said, well, we need these agencies. We need to bring these wines in, you know. And eventually, we looked at the likes of Paris and London and New York, and those wines were selling. There's no reason whatsoever why they wouldn't sell in Dublin first and in the rest of the country eventually. I mean, Dublin has such a young population, love their fun, they love what's different, so there was no reason whatsoever. But it took time, it took a while. So that's what we continue doing anyway. And really, over the last 11 years, we've accumulated the most incredible list of natural wine, I think, you know, because like we have about 516 wines to this date on our portfolio, which for a small company is way more than we need, because like any accountant will tell us that, you know, you're mad, like, you know, actually my accountant keeps saying that to me anyway. But it's hard not to bring them because you keep discovering those new wines and so on. And out of the 516 wines, I'd say the 280 of them are real. Some of the key natural wine from the key natural wine maker in the Jura, in Italy, all over the world, really, Australia, Oregon, California, and the rest are. I mean, I think our portfolio is built in a way that all the wines are low intervention and honest. If they're not natural, all of them, even the entry level, we source them from cooperative, from larger scale wineries that are really working cleanly. You know, their vineyards are if not certified organic, they work organically, they work very close with sustainability in mind, and most importantly, they actually, when the grapes arrive in the winery, you could see, you can taste a low intervention. As I say, those entry level wine taste of fruit and nothing much else, of native yeasts. There's no yeast factor there to give a taste such to the wine. We love to think that they are very pure as well, you know. So that's for the entry level. So that's what we've been doing then for the since 1999. And I would say, having great fun, you know, doing it. And now, of course, look at today, you know. Of course, things change very rapidly. So as I say, it was very gradual. Try to sell wine. People were listing some besides some more, maybe more conventional wine on their list. But they loved the idea of having few of natural wines on the side. And then I must say, in Dublin city center, you know, Luz Cannon and Brian Kevin arrived, and I know this is another podcast where Brian explained at length, and I was really blushing there. But like Brian explained at length how we met, and so I won't repeat all this. But it is true that when he came with that idea, I say, wow, yeah, that sounds great. Of course, he's been in the same places that we hang around, every time we're in Paris and so on. So wanting to recreate one thing like that in Dublin was absolutely brilliant. So we were delighted. He opened Luz Cannon, and you can see now it has. The minute he opened, it worked. It was packed. People were drinking outside, and I think it's a real success and great success. And we can see that a lot of other places now have opened since. And really focusing on those wine made naturally, and it's much more vibrant now, you know, and it's still really in infancy, because there's still so much more that can be done, and more places will open, and even not just new places. I know for a fact that there are a lot of places that are in existence for a number of years, and they really really would love to. I mean, sustainability, what we eat, what we drink is so important. How it's produced, provenance. There's always been a huge focus in Ireland about this, you know, from the restaurant side. And of course, you know, the logical way is to extend this to drinks. So now people want to know how wine is produced, who's behind the wine, and Irish people love stories. They love the story behind any product, and God knows, with the characters that are making natural wine, there are a lot of stories to be told. I mean, we meet the most amazing along the way. I mean, people, I just mentioned recently Claude Courtois, which has finally got an allocation. As tiny as it is, at least it is here. And it was the case with Ganeva, it was the case with Kenjiro Kagami. No, I'm mentioning there maybe the people that we have the smallest amount of wine. But it is just, it's almost a kind of a queuing system there that, they have no wine. They could sell three times over or four times over the harvest. So then you arrive as a new country, Ireland. Okay, right. The good thing is when it comes to France and a lot of the country, they say, oh yeah, Ireland, good idea. I'd love to have my wine in Ireland. So I'm not saying that we jumping the queue, but eventually we seem to get, after a year or two of waiting, we seem to be getting an allocation fairly fast. I must say also, it must be said that the contact and the help and being friend, in other words, with Eric Nario from Le Cave does help for sure to open doors. As an introduction, there's no one that I know of in the natural wine world that is the most respected, the most known, and Eric should be on his podcast one day. I'm sure it's on the card. I'm sure, because he is, and all those praise he's getting, he's not looking for them. That's for sure. I mean, I was in Georgia recently, and we were talking at length with John Woodman of Pheasant Steers about Eric and how he put people in contact, then retires slowly, and then the people he put in contact 9 times out of 10 become super friends. That's what happened to me and John, for example, and with so many other growers. So, what we love about natural wine is that it's a community, but it's not closed. Everyone's welcome. There is a huge amount of fun, loads of hard work from the growers, from anyone that want to start importing natural wine in the country, and of course try to make it work. But above all, it's friendship all over, you know, friendship. You meet people and it's just so much more than just business, you know. That's the magic of the natural wine world. There's no way, there's no coming back. And as we often say, I remember a few years ago I was telling people, like, you know, how do you recognize a natural wine? Is it just a funky label and all? Well, I said, no, you know, I used to tend to say, well, you know, like, you taste the wine, and like if the acidity, the natural acidity, the brightness and the freshness dance on your tongue, really grab your attention, and then the fruit start to dance freely on your tongue, there is a good chance that is a well-made a natural wine. That's where we're at the moment, you know.
As I say, lovely to hear that sort of all in one go, really. And, you know, I think you're a natural, really, you know, being able to weave these threads of the story together. And yeah, I've always had that sense that natural wine is about much more than just economics or the design of the label. You know, there is a depth to it. And I think you express that, you know, really well. So, you know, I'm happy to share that and to get that out there. I'm also super happy that you made reference to Brian and his awesome appearance on the podcast, episode 270, if you haven't heard it yet, in which he spoke to the evolution of the food and the drink scene in Dublin, really, you know, talking about his experience through his eyes. And what I think would be really interesting here today is to ask you to in a sense, give the view, you know, through your eyes of what's happening wider in Ireland. So, you know, your business works right the way across Ireland, and you're an ambassador, I guess, for those wines. You're going out there, you're communicating, but you're also a businessman. You're keeping a track of new openings. You're wanting people to do well in their business and to be equipped to go out and sell those wines and to do well for everybody involved. So like I say, I think there's, you know, in my view, you know, perhaps nobody better to, you know, share what are you seeing, you know, give us your kind of take on what is the kind of current state and maybe, yeah, some of the evolution and the history of what you've seen evolving in the food and drink scene in Ireland.
Sure. Yeah, very good.
Bit of a big question.
Yeah, long, yeah.
And your take.
Sure, yeah, and I'm sure I will probably forget half of the people that actually are working with us and promoting natural wine in their own area in the country. The experience for us, like, you know, as you mentioned, we are covering the whole of Ireland. I mean, the business is based in Kilkenny, and we have a view of the whole country. Obviously, Dublin is the main attraction. This is where decisions are made. This is where the restaurants are the busier. This is the most restaurant. This is so. We did focus a lot on Dublin, but parallel to that, of course, we covered the whole country. And I mentioned the initial orders we were getting for those natural wine back in 2008 were from Ballymallow House outside Dublin, and very quickly then we took focus on Cork. I mean, the second largest city in the country, but also a place that I actually lived for 6 months back in 1990, so 5 years before to make a definite move in Ireland. And I got to realize, to meet and to hear about those incredible food producers that they have in County Cork, and really leading the way from the very beginning. I was on the big stage yesterday listening to Kevin from Loose Cannon, and he mentioned that the farmhouse, the most original cheese farmhouse produced in Ireland, started there. So yes, naturally, we went with our wine, with our provenance, with their, you know, the fact that they are made with no additives and that they're made by really real producer, real people behind those wines. And we got a great reception there, you know, because in the city center, it was hard to break eventually. And we always knew that you just take one place, you know. It just take one place. And that's what that happened over and over. Take the history of London. 2008, Eric Nario started to bring his wine with his team of Le Cave de Pyrene in London. And, you know, no one really wanted to buy those wines. I said, really, my customer, I'm not sure. And then what does he do? He had no, you know, he had almost no choice than opening his own wine bar. And he opened Terroir, and as we know, the rest is history. Now there probably have 200 eateries and wine bars in London selling natural wine just like that, like without even thinking twice, you know. And so there was a really nice wine bar in Cork that was really focusing on artisan wine away from the mainstream of commercial wine, and they were really known already for, and they were gaining a great momentum. Latitude 51. So when we approached them, we were supplier of theirs, and they were getting a few of our wine. But I think over the years, and for the last 4 or 5 years, they really started to get the hinge of natural wine. And now they probably have about 85% of their wine. So that's for Cork City. And of course, then, of course, other restaurants started to lease those wines as well. You know, I won't be able to mention them all, obviously, and I apologize if anyone's listening and I don't mention in this. It's almost just impossible. But so that was for Cork. And then, of course, when you talk about Cork City, there was an amazing opening of Takashi Miyazaki opened his restaurant, his dream restaurant of Ichigo Ichie in the city as well. As I don't know, just a listener may not know, but the biggest market for natural wine initially was Paris, where they created the whole natural wine bar thing, and then Japan. There is no one grower that has been making natural wine for 30, 40 years, 20 years that won't tell you that, look, they couldn't sell their wine either in Paris or Japan. That's all they were able to sell. So Takashi is an incredible guy. He has a takeaway in Cork. He opened a takeaway, which was very quickly packed and you couldn't get in. And then he has his dream, a more kind of a formal Japanese restaurant. And of course, he made his list 100% natural wine with some incredible sakes as well. So that was a year and a half ago. He since gained a Michelin star, which is fantastic for him. Parallel to that, you go down to the west of the county, West Cork, and the likes of Muse, the likes of Pilgrims, and I will forget other people, I'm sorry, but you know, and there is a scene there. Those people, those restaurateurs, they are so close to their producer, they forage, they you know, so it was only only natural, there's no point there, but that they would actually start to sell and list those wines. Going up north, we have places in Clare, like the Little Fox, which is a really amazing place in Ennistymon, and going towards Kerry as well, there's a few places there. And then, of course, you hit Galway, you know, I don't know if it's the third city of Ireland, but it's probably the third, but it's energy, is probably, because I'll get in trouble there. But Galway is great. Galway is young. Galway is rocking, always been rocking, and there is a really nice scene there with restaurants like Ardbia and Kai, Tartar and Anir. Really great scene there, and they just sell those wines. And you go as far as Sligo, we have customers there, some lovely cafes open in the evening and selling those wines. We even have a customer in Leitrim and one in Donegal as well. So it's really covering the whole front there, what we call the Wild Atlantic Way for the last... it was always the Wild Atlantic Way, but I think it's been officialized 5-6 years ago. It's a beautiful part of the country, obviously, the wildest part of the country, the really beautiful. South East, the same, Waterford. We have a great restaurant in the south. Now going, I won't say east of Cork, because I would position Cork as the center of the country, but say it is east of Cork. East of Cork, we have Waterford, then you go into Kilkenny, of course, where the shop originates, and we have a lot of customers there. So, yeah, you can see. And actually, there was an interesting thing. We brought the real 1 month in the country. We've been bringing the real 1 month organized initially by Lecav in the UK, and we brought it to Ireland 5 years ago. And this year was the sixth year. And we had a map of Ireland where all the places promoting natural wine were there. And if you look at the map of Ireland, you have the drinking man, you know, the logo of Real Wine Fair. That drinking man represented each establishment. And then if you blew up the if you don't blow up, you look at Ireland, it looks like there's a huge man. And then you blow up the map, and then you see all those areas cover, and there's places everywhere now to find those wines, which is fantastic. As I say, it's Dublin, of course, capital city, but the rest of the country is equally as important to us, for sure, you know, for sure.
Super, super interesting. I'm excited, really, to get out and explore some of these places. You know, it's great that you've named some of the places that you supply. Obviously, you can't name them all on here, but yeah, we want to leave some work for me and for the listeners to do to get out and find the other places as well. So that's all good. And I'd just like to finish off, really. And yeah, my take on what you've said is that things are moving in the right direction. Things are in good health. There's good people out there. You know, you're the ambassador initially for these wines, and you've got your ambassadors out there. The drinking man on the map is the proof of that, really. And I just really want to, curious to ask, you know, what is it that you think that Ireland needs and that your customers need and maybe you need, you know, and the industry needs here to carry on this trajectory, to keep going forward, to keep drawing new people in and to keep growing?
Yeah, no, that's, looking at the future, like, I mean, yeah, it is encouraging. You know, in fairness, I think where we stand now compared to where we stood 11 years ago, obviously we can see the progress made, the wines are more accepted, they're more understood, people love them and look for them. So, but having said that, in the other side as well, you know, natural wine, we always kind of be limited. I think what is the production? I don't have the statistics at hand, but I can just imagine that if organic biodynamic production of wine worldwide is a mere 10% of the production, growing, that is for sure. But still, at the moment, maybe 10, and I can be corrected on that. So I imagine that natural wine represents maybe 2-3%, if even, of the world production. So at the moment, obviously, it's always going to be a certain limit to what you can get. Although, as we see, there's more and more and more growers wanting to work in that way. The stories of growers that are taking over their parents' estate, and they say, yep, dad, I'm going to do the vineyard, I take over, but I want to do it my way, and it's going to be maybe not like the way you guys used to work, this generation, maybe more 2 generations ago, and trying to make wines much more naturally, and certainly sustainability in the vineyard. So that will bring, obviously, more volume, if you can talk in those terms, to the markets. So that will be needed. So but as the demand grows, this will happen, and that is happening already. So otherwise, what you know, what I see in Ireland happening, yes, it's just going to become more vibrant, even more than it is now. More places will open, more places will switch their list and list more and more natural wines. It's inevitable, you know. And that's what I think young wine drinkers are demanding, you know. That's the magic of natural wine. It brings so many young wine drinkers into the world of wine. My own experience, and that I want to, my own son, who is 28 now, started to help us in the business when he was about 18, 19. And he said, you know, Dad, I help you. But, you know, he wasn't really into wine, really. And then he had a bottle of one of our staff party. He was invited. Obviously, he was working with us. He came to our staff party, and we were drinking those incredible Burgundies. And he said, yeah, I just sip there. He wasn't very excited. You know, he loved the food. He loved the wine. And all of a sudden, there was a magnum of Jean Foyard on the table, and it was time to drink this. And then that was it. Ask him anytime. That was it for him. That's it. He was hooked. And now he's completely... He minds the shop now in Kilkenny, and he put all the order through with Margaret, his girlfriend, with both part of the team, of Le Caveau team. And you can't shut them up about natural wine. You know, customer opening the door, he will talk, and he's completely passionate about them as well, you know. So that's a good example of what's happening out there. Vibrant, young, fun, you know, all the kind of a snobism in a way is taken out of the equation, and that's really make wine so accessible, and that is a recipe for success for me and for the future. Those young wine drinkers that are drinking natural wine today will not revert to something different when they grow older. That I can promise, because I always say to people, if the next 12 bottles of wine you drink are natural, the chances are you'll find it not difficult to go back, but you'll see the difference. And that is what my experience of lots of customers. Future is bright for me. I mean, what I can see around is, there'll be more and more places to drink natural wine and to enjoy natural wine, and that's for the better, really. And it's never going to... I mean, the big industry, look at what we had to deal with, you know, over the years. You look at the debate on social media, in the press and everything, and, you know, there's that kind of a patronizing, you know, over the years. It started with pure dismissal, out-of-hand dismissal, to patronizing, to and sometimes even more violent than that on the debates. And so the trade, the industry, we're not really ready for those wines because they... Yeah, I suppose people have learned, they've studied their MWs or their WSET diplomas, and they've learned everything they know tasting conventional wine. Conventional wine, Sauvignon Blanc, should taste like that, should smell like this. And if it doesn't smell like this, I can't recognize it, so it's a little bit annoying, because they used to be, they're a bit, natural wine shake a little bit over all that, because Sauvignon Blanc, I'm afraid to break the news, but like Sauvignon Blanc, they don't all smell the same. The yeast used in the industry make them smell that way, but if you plant a Sauvignon Blanc in a field in Pouilly-Fumé, or if you plant it in a field, even actually not even going to the east side of the world, but in a field even 20 kilometers from Pouilly-Fumé in the Loire, chances are the nose will be slightly different. You will get the nettle, you will get the bright white fruit, but you may not always get the cat speed that you ever expect, and so on and so forth. That comes, I'm afraid, from a yeast that's manufactured in Copenhagen, I believe. But anyway, that's just a kind of a story. But so yes, natural wine shook a bit that world, and it was only to be expected that people wouldn't necessarily, the whole wine industry would embrace them. But now, you know, I think once you have the younger drinker on your side and people that are open mind, and after all, that's all we want to convince, really, people that are open mind. And it's when I introduce them for the first 5-6 years, I say, look, I'm not here to tell you that, you know, if it's not natural, it's not nice. I never said that. I never will say. I never said that, you know, this, you should drink that now because the rest is bad for you. Not at all. This is an alternative. That's how I always introduce natural wine. If you want to be careful, it's produced, what you're putting into your stomach as the drink, you know, you should really consider natural wine, because that's a good alternative there.
Thank you so much, Pascal. It was an absolute pleasure sitting down with you. And as I told you at the time, you are an absolute podcast natural. I'd highly encourage you to check out their website and main social media handles below.
And of course, I would love to have you following along with me, where I'm at Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter, and email hello@interpretingwine.com. Next time on the podcast, in episode number 296, we hear from Beverly Matthews in her Loire Wines Talk with her special guest, Pascal Rossignol. See you then.